Welcome to Rome, dear brothers. Jesus welcomes you in Rome. If we look deep down in our hearts, we find that there are two desires, two longings in everybody's heart. And they are success in life, succeeding, and happiness. These two desires are universal. We want to achieve something, to be successful in life, and we want to be happy and to make people around us happy. So my intent is to show how Jesus is the best ally in pursuing these two goals. First, success. And then also joy, happiness. Let us start with success. The French philosopher Blaise Pascal has a very important thought. In one of his thoughts, he says that there are three orders or three levels in which a person can be outstanding, be great. The first level is the level of the body, the material level. And in this order are great, outstanding people, successful people, those who have many riches, are very rich, or are very strong, the athletes, or are very beautiful. So we should not despise these values, because if they are used properly, in accord with the will of God, they are good values. But this is the first level, the most elementary level. There is a second level of greatness, which consists in intelligence, in the genius. And in this level are outstanding persons, those who have enriched humanity with poetry, discoveries, literature. So this is the level of genius. This the greatness is infinitely more important than the first one. And the people usually stop at this. They know only these two possibilities of achieving something in life, be successful, either in the body, material level, or in the genius, in the intelligence. Pascal says, no, there is a third level which is infinitely superior to the second, and it is the level of holiness, sanctity. In this level, Jesus is the summit, even the source. Then there is Blessed Mother, Mary, Saint Joseph, beside her, all the saints, and all the people of God. This greatness, infinitely superior to the second, than the second is in relation to the first level. Why? Why is holiness the highest level of greatness? Because it lasts forever. It doesn't end with death. Secondly, this enriches all humanity. Holy people have enriched humanity. And then there is another reason, because in this level, in the field of holiness, what is most valuable and most noble in human person is revealed. What is our most precious value? It's freedom, freedom. And holiness depends on freedom. It's achieved by freedom. It doesn't depend on us to be born strong or weak, rich or poor, beautiful or less beautiful. But it depends on us to be honest or dishonest persons, to be good persons or bad persons. It depends on us. Therefore, in holiness, we realize what is most precious in us, the freedom. And now, the good news about holiness. Holiness is something which in this year in the Catholic Church is very commonly spoken of. Because at the beginning of this year, Pope Francis issued an exhortation on holiness, reminding people that all are called to holiness. We are, as people of God, we are all destined to be holy. And as we are destined, created to be holy, if we don't strive to be holy, we are failures. We fail. So the contrary of holy is not sinner, it's failure. Because we have been created precisely to be at the image and resemblance of God. And if we neglect completely this vocation, we miss the very sense of our life, our vocation. I said the good news. There is a good news about holiness, you know. And the good news is that we are not obliged to choose either to be somebody to excel in the first level or the second level. To be holy is possible even if you are an athlete, if you are an actor or an actress. In every situation of life, in every vocation, it is possible to strive for holiness. As a businessman, as a workman, as a husband, as a wife, of course, everybody can aim at be great in holiness. Now, the next question is, what does it mean to be holy? Well, first of all, we know that holiness exists at the beginning because God is holy. Holiness is God. When God appears in the Bible, we always hear this cry, holy, 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 kadosh, in Hebrew, kadosh, kadosh. God is holy, the only one. So to be holy means simply to get in touch with God, to be united to God, to be at the sight of God. Now, in the Old Testament, at least at the beginning, to be in contact with the source of holiness, with God, meant to observe some laws, to abstain from something which could pollute the holiness of a person. So what was related to sex or alimentation were taboos. They're that there are things, animals, which are unclean. So if you touch these animals, you lose your contact with the holiness of God. But in the Psalms and in the prophets already, there is a new idea of holiness, which stresses the importance of the heart. It is not so much what you touch. It depends on what you have in your heart. Then Jesus came. And in Jesus, we have the very holiness of God made flesh. So Jesus is the holiness of God made visible with a human look, a human touch. Jesus is the holiness of God. In fact, in the gospel, twice we read this statement. Once in the mouth of Peter, when Jesus says, "Do you want to go away? Do you want to leave me?" And Peter answers, "Lord, to whom should we go? You have words of eternal life, and we have known that you are the Holy One of God," which means you are the very holiness of God. So Jesus is holiness of God made flesh. And how beautiful, dear brothers, to read the gospel and see, to look at the holiness of Jesus, the beauty and the holiness of Jesus. Everything Jesus does is holy, love, because the holiness of God is something identical with love. God is love. And every word Jesus speaks is love. Every gesture he makes is a gesture of mercy, of love, especially towards the needy, the poor, the sick. Then, after Jesus, to be holy means simply to be in touch with Jesus, to be in contact with Jesus. And how do we realize that? How do we communicate? How do we establish a link between us and Jesus, who lived 2,000 years ago? Well, there are two words which summarize all. And these two words are appropriation and imitation. But we should keep the order, not first imitation and then appropriation, but first appropriation and then imitation. I explain what I mean. Appropriation means that I appropriate to myself the holiness of Jesus freely through the sacraments. In the baptism, we have been put in touch with Jesus. We have become members of his body. So the same spirit from the head, Jesus, flows through the body. And in the Eucharist, we renew this contact with Jesus every time. In the sacrament of reconciliation, we get back the holiness of Jesus. And there is also another mean which is available at any time, night and day, and is faith. If in the night, when am I alone, I make an act of faith, I imagine Jesus, I realize that Jesus is there in front of me, and I make an act of faith on him, I say, "You have died for me. You have risen for me. Then anytime we make an act of faith, we appropriate the very holiness of Jesus. It becomes ours. Which means, dear brothers, that holiness, before being a duty, it's a gift. And this is something revolutionary. If you're coming to Rome would enrich you this vision, your journey to Rome would not be in vain. Because this is a revolution any Christian is supposed to make, and very few make it. What does this revolution consist in? You see, Christian religion is unlike any other religion. Why? Because any religion or philosophical, religious philosophy begins telling people what they must do to be saved, to obtain the reward, eternal reward. It could be intellectual speculations or renunciation, ascetic renunciation, but the scheme is always the same. If you want to obtain the prize, you must go through this way. Christianity doesn't begin telling people what they must do to be saved. It begins telling people what God has done in Jesus Christ to make them holy. I repeat, just in case my sentence didn't go through. Christian religion doesn't begin telling people what they must do to be saved. It begins telling people what God has done to save them. Christianity is a religion of grace. Amazing grace. You know this song, Amazing Grace? Some of you do, huh? Amazing grace. How sweet the sound. Yes, we are supposed to appropriate the holiness of Jesus through the sacraments, the prayer, and the act of faith. This is what Paul taught all the time, because he had done the experience of this. He used to be, he says in Philippians 3, he used to be a Pharisee, striving to be just, upright, observing the law, being irreproachable. I was a reproachable man as far as the holiness embodied in the law is concerned. But one day in my life appeared Jesus, my Lord, and I considered all my works, my efforts, to be manure. I don't want any longer his holiness coming from me, for my effort, for my observance of the law. I want the holiness which comes from God through Jesus, and it is based on faith. But this is what many, many saints have said and repeated. But unfortunately, the majority of Christian people didn't get this insight. They are still in the Old Testament, and even in the archaic times of the Old Testament. They, unconsciously, you used to think that if we strive to go to Mass on Sunday, to obey, to abstain for lusts, we will get some reward. So in this way, God becomes our debtor and we are his creditors. But God doesn't accept that. At the beginning, there is the free grace of God through Jesus Christ, and we must simply extend our hand and receive. Salvation arrives as a clapping of hands. There is the hand of God stretched to offer to man in Jesus salvation, and he waits from the other side a outstretched hand, which a hand of a beggar who receives. And this hand is faith. So remember this. Holiness is a gift for us, a gift which is always available to us in the sacraments of the church, in the word of God, in an act of faith, in prayer. When a saint, St. John Chrysostom, did you hear this name, St. John Chrysostom? Yes. Well, he was a great preacher, a great preacher. In one sermon, he says, imagine this scene. In a stadium, a memorable struggle has taken place. A brave man has confronted the tyrant of the city. And with much trouble, much suffering, and even blood, he has conquered the tyrant. You were among the onlookers. You didn't fight. You didn't get sweat or blood. But if you are in favor of this man, if you shake the audience around you in his favor, you are a great supporter, a great fan. I tell you that you will have a share in his prize. There is more. Imagine this man has no need of the crown he has won. What will he do? He will give the crown to his fan, his supporter. And this is how Christian salvation takes place. Jesus is the brave, the hero who on the cross fought the tyrant and conquered the tyrant, Satan, and all the evil of the world. He died. But if you look at him and you believe that he died for you, you will get his holiness, the prize. Certainly, you remember, I mentioned it as a second word. Appropriation. First of all, holiness comes from gift, from taking a gift, grace. But there is also the need of imitation. Not as the beginning, but as a result, as a consequence. What does this mean, imitation? Means that once we have been saved, we have received the grace of God, we must in our life act coherently. Imitate Jesus. He said, learn from me, who I am humble and meek. So in life, we should try to live according to the gospel, to imitate Jesus. But this is what happens also in our biological life. Can a child do anything to be born in the womb of his or her mother? I repeat the question. Can a child do anything to be born? No. He needs the love of a father and a mother. He can do nothing. At the beginning, life is a purely gift. But once he is born, he must put in motion his lungs. He must suck milk. Otherwise, the life he has received dwindles and dies. So it's quite clear the relationship between faith and works. At the beginning, there is faith, a free gift of grace, but faith demands that we put coherently the faith in practice, in our conduct as a priest, as a lay person, as an husband, as a professor, and so on. Imitate, appropriation, imitation. I repeat or summarize. There are three levels in which we be successful in life. First, the level of body, and on this level are outstanding persons, successful persons, the rich persons, the beautiful persons, the strong persons. There is a second level of greatness, the greatness of intelligence, of genius. This level are outstanding musicians, poets, writers, scientists. There is a third level, and it is the level of holiness. And this level, Jesus is the summit, and we are all called to be great, successful on this level. And unless we, at least we try, we fail, we are failures. We have failed the goal of our life. Now, let me say something shorter about the second great desire hidden in our hearts, happiness. We all want to be happy. St. Augustine used to say, as soon as you pronounce this word, happiness, joy, you will see people stressing them, stretching, and look at you to see if you have something to answer the thirst for joy, happiness. Now, my aim is to show again that faith, more concretely, Jesus, is our best ally in achieving happiness and joy in life. Not just in afterlife, after death, in this life. And if you are patient enough to follow me for a few moments, are you patient enough? Have you still some spare forces to listen to me? Well, I will try to show why Jesus is our best ally in achieving happiness in life. Jesus worked a revolution regarding joy. This is the experience, human experience, universal human experience, sung by poets, writers from the ancient times, even for the pagan authors. And this common experience that there is a link between pleasure and pain. Disordered pleasure, of course, and pain. And it's a common experience that a disordered pleasure leads to pain, is followed by pain. In the psychologists say, eros et thanatos, erotism leads to death. This is the best example of this human reality nowadays is the abuse of drugs or the abuse of sex. Drugs gives you a moment of ecstasy. They say, I never tried, of course, but they say that drugs gives you uplift, and but it leaves you down, 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 and it kills you. You see this link between pleasure and pain. Even the abuse of sex, not the sex, which is a gift of God, but the abuse of sex, reducing that a person as an object of my desire, as a possession, this is a big sin, is a the universal sin today. The abuse of sex gives you a moment of ecstasy of joy, but destroys you and destroys other people. Now, what is the revolution of Jesus? Instead, I said shortly before, instead of a pleasure which leads to pain, Jesus proposes us a pain which leads to pleasure. But in this way, pleasure, happiness, has the last word and lasts forever. And when I say that Jesus proposes us a pain that leads to joy, to pleasure, I don't mean we should inflict to us particular penances or no. Accepting the duties of your state, accepting the renunciation needed to be faithful in marriage, for instance, to abstain for theft or other illegal actions. This is what suffer means, accepting renunciation, accepting what the life presents us. Suffering. Then this will lead us to inner joy in this life, because you know that God is with you, that God is in you. You know why you are in life. You are this inner peace in your heart. And of course, you are less afraid of death because you know that death is as not the last word. Jesus himself, with his Paschal mystery, is the best example of this new way to happiness. He suffered. He suffered, but then he rose from the death. Only death lasted one day. There is just one Good Friday, but the resurrection inaugurated a state. So Jesus will be always in this glorious happiness in the Father. And this is what Jesus proposed to us, his disciples, accepting the sacrifice needed, especially needed to be faithful, to help people, to go toward the needy, accepting this for sharing in his joy. He said one day, "I came to the world that you may have joy and that your joy may be perfect." Amen.